Welcome to the Razors Inc. podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. They say you can tell a lot about a person by their hands or by what they laugh at. I contend you can tell a lot about a person simply by asking, which Batman? So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, Jonathan's favorite portrayal of the Caped Crusader. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
I was not a fan of the Batman comic book and movie franchise. I'm a devotee of network television, having grown up and watched it in its glory days, delivering breakthrough programming on just three channels at no cost, and all you needed was a rooftop antenna or rabbit ears. This podcast, like my four-part podcast, my RX for network television, is a tribute to the institution of network television by discussing a campy, albeit creative example of programming named Batman, which ran for 120 episodes on ABC between 1966 and 1968. When Batman was introduced in 1966, it was a lull before the storm arriving in the second half of the 60s, marked by assassinations, campus protests, political tumult, and psychedelics. Batman provided the viewing audience a half hour of escapism. It's no surprise to me the series was canceled after the 1968 season because the viewing audience and country was in a different headspace. Ask your parents or grandparents. Lorenzo Semple Jr. developed Batman. He rolled out of World War II with distinction and began writing plays and short stories and television episodes. Batman was his big break. After Batman, he had a successful career as a screenwriter on notable movies including Papillon, The Parallax View, The Drowning Pool, 3 Days of the Condor, and many television programs. See his filmography. Semple teamed up with producer William Dozier, naming him producer and narrator of the series.
You think Gotham City is a peaceful city? Ho, ho, ho! Put your gum under your seats, hold your breath, and get ready to cheer Batman and hiss his diabolical enemies.
It's no coincidence the series aired on ABC, which didn't carry the panache of CBS, the Tiffany Network, or NBC, the Peacock Network. So ABC had to work harder, which meant taking chances on programming like Batman. ABC delivered remarkable groundbreaking programming and serves as a lesson to all of us. There's always room for one more if you have a better mousetrap. Dozier didn't read comic books. He bought some Batman comic books and came to the conclusion he'd produce a weekly 30-minute series blending serious with funny, resulting in campy. His job was to bring eyeballs to the show every week, keep them glued, and deliver network ad buys for ABC. He wanted every set of eyeballs, including children, young adults, and adults. Over the 3-year run, Dozier would cast an amazing assemblage of unlikely guest stars to attract every demographic to the show, and it worked.
Next week, Miss Tallulah Bankhead locks horns with Batman. Next week, Victor Buono returns as King Tut. Carolyn Jones as Marcia, Queen of Diamonds. Julie Newmar springs back as the Catwoman. Cliff Robertson as Shame corrals the Caped Crusaders.
Dozier served as the narrator for all 120 episodes, with cameos in a couple of episodes, which suggests to me he was very intimate and guarded with the production. His outro,
same bat time, same bat channel,
is characteristic of Dozierverse, which refers to the distinctive style and tone of the show he created. Adam West, who played Batman, was a struggling actor, taking bit parts, and the series was his big break. Tip of the hat to you, Adam. You found that alchemy of drama, humor, camp, and letting us all in on the joke, so to speak.
Hello, Batman.
You're a rare lady, Catwoman. You're right on time.
I'm rare. In more ways than that.
I'm glad you decided to surrender. We would have caught you eventually.
Do you think so?
Certainly, there's no escaping the inexorable law of justice. Shall we go?
Must we? So soon? I thought that, well, you know, perhaps we might get to know each other a little better.
I would think that we know each other well enough by now.
Don't run away, Batman. I won't bite.
I'm not afraid of you, Catwoman. You're very beautiful, Catwoman.
Yes, you're quite right. I am.
Burt Ward was only 19 when he landed the role as Robin, originally looking to be only an extra. He had no acting background. I contend Burt was playing himself, a 19-year-old Eager Beaver teenager.
Holy slip disc! Holy known unknown flying objects! Holy hamstrings! Holy mucilage! Holy homecoming! Holy shrinkage! Holy bouncing boilerplate! Holy reincarnation! Holy Las Vegas! Holy mechanical armies! Holy magic lantern! Holy geography of... Holy surprise parties! Holy understatements, Batman! Holy taxidermy! Holy eggshell! Holy hotfoot! Holy felony! Holy interplanetary yardstick! Holy unrefillable prescriptions! Holy Fourth Amendment!
At 19 and a newcomer to television, he wasn't concerned with the career implications of playing second to Batman in leotards and a cape. At the conclusion of the series, Adam West went on to act, write books, but I contend was forever typecasted as Batman, which he profited from until his passing in 2017. Burt Ward did some acting gigs, but he's known for his animal food business and animal philanthropy. Check him out online.
Where's Bruce Wayne?
Mr. Wayne is not at home, sir.
Too bad. I'll get my revenge later. Right now I'll settle for cash. Where's the safe?
My duties do not include aiding and abetting thievery.
Alan Napier, the butler Alfred, rolled out of British theater working alongside Olivier Gielgud and was cast by Orson Welles in Macbeth. Mrs. Cooper, or Aunt Harriet, played by Madge Blake, Commissioner Gordon, played by Neil Hamilton, and Chief O'Hara, played by Stafford Rep, all were working actors and lucky to catch a piece of the spotlight on the series. Batgirl didn't show up until season 3 and was portrayed by Yvonne Craig, who was a ballet dancer and actress.
Our disguised and now Titian-haired beauty makes a smashing entrance.
Holy apparition!
No, Boy Wonder, I'm Batgirl. You are no longer alone, Caped Crusaders.
Why did Batgirl show up late in season 3? I suspect low ratings and the need for more eyeballs. Male, for obvious reasons, but female viewers appreciated a leading lady crime fighter. Batman was ahead of its time, ladies. More about leading ladies on Batman shortly. There's three recurring villains I want to address before moving on to the impressive guest star list. Before portraying the Riddler, Frank Gorshin had been acting in plays and performing in nightclubs with a host of B-movie appearances.
Snap on the bat cuffs!
You've got me, Batman! What the...
It's too delicious! I even gave you a tip-off!
Batman, you've made a mistake. He didn't steal that cross.
What?!
I tell you, it belongs to him. He lent it to me for a show.
But, Mr. Peel, we saw him take it from you at gunpoint.
Gunpoint?
Holy ashtray, he did tip us off. Oh, what is it that no man wants to have, yet no man wants to lose? A lawsuit. Correct, Boy Wonder.
I appreciate his portrayal, and I see the seedy nightclub life experience woven throughout his crazy character. Batman was a big break for Gorshin. Before portraying the Penguin, Burgess Meredith, acted in television shows like Rawhide, Bonanza, and The Virginian.
Maybe I'm dumb, Penguin, but I don't dig this caper.
That was very simple, my little gosling. I'm going to unleash the most bizarre, senseless barrage of umbrellas onto Gotham City. It'll be senseless to everybody but the Batman, whose keen mind will unquestionably piece together the clues to my crime.
Well, what crime? What the heck are you planning?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing?
What do you mean, nothing?
I am planning nothing. The Batman's going to do that for me. The Batman's not only going to pick my crime, he is going to provide me with a blueprint as to how I should pull it off.
We all know him for his role as Mickey, Rocky's trainer. Before playing the Joker, Cesar Romero had a successful acting career, including Broadway, films, and television.
And now, people of Gotham City, the moment you have all been waiting for. The grand finale, the climax of my performance, the zenith of my career. The unmasking of Batman and Robin, the boy wonder.
The role of Joker made him a household name. In my opinion, the Joker is a huge metaphor for the series. Hey, you're in on the joke about this campy series. If you were a kid, you took the Riddler, Penguin, and Joker at face value. But if you were a young adult or older, you saw these three portrayals in a different context, particularly if you were enjoying a potent cocktail, reefer, or LSD, maybe all three. I've spoken to folks who enjoyed the series while indulging, and they confirm my statement. Back to leading ladies. Before starring as Catwoman, Julie Newmar had a successful career in films, Broadway, and television.
Are we set to greet our two pigeons?
Oh, they're going to get a hello they'll never forget.
Good. Just make sure nothing goes wrong. I wouldn't want to miss this opportunity.
We're ready whenever you are, Catwoman.
Felix.
Yes, Catwoman?
You can brush my pussy willows before you leave. And don't go against the fur.
I'll treat them like they was my very own.
She earned a Tony Award for Best Featured Actress in a play called The Marriage Go-Round. From Tony Award to Batman likely wasn't her plan, but I suggested the show catapulted her to national attention, as it did for all the aforementioned talent. Shout out to Eartha Kitt and Lee Merriweather, who also played Catwoman.
No best-dressed list is complete without the addition of the Queen of Criminals, the Princess of Plunder, yours untruly. Right, Manx and Angora?
Right.
In any comparison between Batgirl and myself, she runs a poor third.
Like Star Trek, it was great to see a black actress in a principal role on 60s television. Catwoman introduced the nation to sensuality of vinyl on women, almost a half a century ahead of its time. The vinyl outfit kept male viewers glued to the screen while they got the slant eye from wives or girlfriends. I suspect many a man working inside the wardrobe department pined for the opportunity to keep that vinyl costume shiny with various sprays and cloths. Producer Dozier's methodology for keeping viewers coming back each week included the casting of likely and very unlikely guest stars. Here's a partial list. Some of the names you may not recognize, but I assure you, look them up and their filmography will impress you. Victor Bono, Vincent Price.
Very likely our arch foe, that egg-scribble egghead.
And do you also know what we want in exchange for the dear commissioner's life? I'm exhausted. Alga, you exquisite, diabolical genius. Now that we've got them, let's exterminate them.
Explain.
And now let us make our exit.
Cliff Robertson. He won the Best Actor Oscar in 1968. In the movie Charlie, see my podcast. Carolyn Jones, went on to star in The Addams Family. Eye candy, folks, just saying, remember eyeballs. Milton Berle.
Man-eating lilacs, holy purple cannibals.
Exactly, Boy Blunder. A rare species just in from Brazil, which I crossed with even more carnivorous plants. And gusty gourmands they are. I got a hold of an explorer one day in the jungle and left nothing but his shoelaces.
Rudy Valley, old-time movie star. Look him up. James Brolin, soon to be a big TV star and father to Josh. Bruce Lee, Ethel Merman, see her filmography. Dina Merrill, see her filmography. Howard Duff, see his filmography. Roddy McDowell, see his filmography.
What is our super crime boss?
Silence! Back to your books. You'll be told in good time.
Oh, you're some clever worm, bookworm.
Oh, it's books, my sweet Lydia. Books, books. That's the secret of my success. Books. Oh, I read them all. I inherit the wisdom of the ages. Every plot ever devised is here, inside my head.
Shelley Winters, see her filmography. I owe her a podcast. Van Johnson, see his filmography. Otto Preminger, the famed director. This one amazes me.
Curtains for the Cape Crusaders.
What happened? You're supposed to be frozen.
It was a good idea of yours to wear our bat thermal underwear.
I must conclude Otto had a sense of humor or had a passion for the character he played, Mr. Freeze, maybe as in freeze frame. Just a suggestion. He had 32 movies under his belt as director before his guest appearance on Batman, including the 1965 big-budget John Wayne World War II Navy movie In Harm's Way, The Man with the Golden Arm starring Frank Sinatra, Porgy and Bess starring Sidney Poitier and Dorothy Dandridge, Exodus starring Paul Newman, Advice and Consent starring Henry Fonda, to name a few. During his 1966 Batman gig, he was already at work on the 1967 film Hurry Sundown, starring Michael Caine and Jane Fonda. He was nominated for 3 Academy Awards, twice for Best Director and once for Best Picture. Wow. Let's continue. Liberace. John Astin went on to play the lead inside the Addams Family opposite Carolyn Jones. Eli Wallach, see his filmography. Tallulah Bankhead, see her filmography. Joan Collins, see her filmography and publishing career.
Now, Commissioner, you are ready to do my bidding. Just say yes, that will be sufficient, although superfluous. No man can resist the stunning note of my voice, 2 octaves above high C.
Jill St. John, see her filmography. Jacques Bergerac, our old friend at this podcast. See my podcast about Jacques. Ida Lupino, see her filmography. Zsa Zsa Gabor. Rob Reiner, played Meathead in All in the Family, went on to become a famous director and producer of notable films. Terry Garr, see her filmography. Jerry Lewis, see my podcast about this comedian, actor, director, and producer.
I have the curious feeling this is all some kind of literary plot.
Let's outwit him, Batman. Let's refuse to bite.
We must, Robin. It's the only way we can...
Are you Batman? Oh, you must be, because that's Robin. Hi, Robin.
Yes, citizen, but don't be alarmed. We're here on official business.
Holy human flies.
Sammy Davis Jr. Jay Sebring. He was cited as the inspiration for Warren Beatty's character in the 1975 film Shampoo. He was killed at age 35 by the Manson family in 1969, just 3 years after his performance on Batman. George Raft, see his filmography. Edward G. Robinson, see my podcast, Solient Green, and his filmography, including 100 films.
A dynamic duo. There are other ways of getting into this building, you know.
But none that provide the element of surprise that we need. What are you doing in Gotham City?
Well, some of the paintings from my collection go on exhibit here tomorrow. I wonder if some creative artist couldn't capture the two of you on canvas.
Perhaps the cubistic school.
Oh, never.
Pop art?
No. I think canned tomato soup is to eat. not to frame and hang on a wall.
Dali, Picasso?
Bit of an art buff yourself, aren't you, Batman?
Now wait for it. Clint Eastwood. 2 years after the release of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Clint Eastwood had supposedly been cast to be Two-Face in the Batman TV show, but the series was canceled before the episode was made. Ask Clint today and he'd respond, "Yeah, I dodged a bullet with that show." The casting inside the series was brilliant, and I contend inexpensive, without getting into the weeds. See my podcast about the brilliance of casting directors, which I can't find working on this television series. It was the show producers. To get the caliber of stars appearing for an episode on this show begs the question, how? Money. Stars rise and fall. Relevancy is important for stars at their peak and those beginning to fall. I'd like to think it's what I call cocktail creed, meaning it's a fun antidote to tell your friends you did a Batman gig at a cocktail party. Shoutouts. Batman was shot with a single camera on a soundstage at 20th Century Fox. Desi Liu had already perfected the three-camera production in the 50s, so I conclude it was a tight budget on Batman for the single camera. The set design was either intentionally inferior to what you'd find in a high school production or brilliantly dumbed down to provide added seasoning to the campy stew, or simply bad because of a low budget. I think the former. Shout out to the costume department. Let's face it, the costumes had as much to do with the characters as the actors. Music was integral to the series. The theme tune was the work of Neil Hefti, performed by his orchestra. The show's score was produced by Nelson Riddle during the first two seasons, see my podcast about music and television, and Billy May produced the musical score in season 3. Batman was a short-lived creative orgy, for lack of a better word, which provided escapism and sold ad time for a third-place network. Appreciate the fact each cast member was likely out of makeup by 8 a.m. and on the set ready to shoot multiple episodes that day. For Adam and Bert, it was brutal because they're in every scene. As for other cast members and the psychotic characters they so aptly portrayed, I suspect there was no lack of stimulants about the trailers or on set, if you get my meaning. Would a network television series about Batman work today? Yes. Because of relaxed television and societal social norms, new characters could be added, adding a diversity I can only begin to imagine. I didn't watch you, Batman, but I have a newfound appreciation for you. Network television today could use a dose of... Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint, and class is dismissed.
And just as the answer to which Batman tells a lot about a person, you can tell a lot about a man by the answer to which Catwoman. And with love to Michelle Pfeiffer, Julie Newmar is the correct answer. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. Also, look for Jonathan's latest short story, The Line in the Lake, already published in the online magazine Mobius. It's been published once again, this time in the June issue of The Anniversary in This Town, published by Scars Publications. You can find it at scars.tv or drop an email to razorsincpodcast@gmail.com.